Glad you could join us today. I'm Mark Bayshore. To lead off our Monday edition, Michigan has the second highest number of juvenile lifers in the U.S. Those are people who were sentenced to life in prison without parole before they turned 18. In 2012, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that sentencing laws mandating life without parole for juvenile offenders amounted to cruel and unusual punishment. Michigan was one of the states not to apply that ruling retroactively. But now, a case before the U.S. Supreme Court could determine whether those juvenile lifers sentenced before 2012 will get a shot at release. Prison reform advocates say it's a step toward a more informed and humane prison system. But victims' rights organizations say it ignores the pain of families whose loved ones were murdered by juvenile offenders. Later on, we'll hear from Jody Robinson, spokesperson for the National Organization of Victims of Juvenile Murderers. But first, we turn to Kristen Staley. Kristen is Associate Director for the Michigan Council on Crime and Delinquency. Welcome back to the show, Kristen.
Nice to have. Thank you.
We'll start with some of the legal history here, Kristen. This upcoming U.S. Supreme Court case is a follow-up to the 2012 case, Miller v. Alabama. Remind us what that case was about and why it was important.
Sure. Miller v. Alabama was really the pinnacle of a long string of cases in the United States Supreme Court, beginning really around 2005 with a case called Roper v. Simmons, where the Supreme Court took up the ruling of whether or not it's constitutional to sentence a person who was sentenced into prison to the death penalty for a young person who was before the age of 18. At that point is really when you see the beginning of the court making that change of understanding that youth are really not adults, nor should they be sentenced as such in the criminal justice system. So beginning in 2005, and then we take a few year hiatus up into around 2010, where we see Graham v. Florida, which is another instance of a young person who was sentenced to life in prison for a non-homicide offense. At that point, the U.S. Supreme Court made a ruling that it's unconstitutional to sentence a person to life without the possibility of parole in prison if they had not committed an offense that ended in a homicide. again, noting very clearly that youth are not adults, that there is clear science and evidence that young people's brains are not developed in the same way, that adolescents are not fully developed in terms of being able to make decisions of what is right or what is wrong. They're still amenable to change and to rehabilitation, that their influences about from their peers are much more heavy than other adults who are fully developed. And then, of course, Miller v. Alabama, about a few years later, takes up the idea that mandating without taking into account these factors of a youth is unconstitutional. It's cruel and unusual punishment to sentence a young person to a life without the possibility of parole.
On those grounds.
On those grounds.
2 years ago, the court did not say whether or not this would apply retroactively. Why are they taking that question up now?
That was whether or not they did that on purpose. It remains to be seen. Because it was such a landmark case in the field of criminal justice, and there's so many people who are now sentenced to die in prison across the state, of course, many states took it up, and it's seen as in many states as being a watershed ruling, very similar to a case like Gideon, for example, that mandated that a right to an attorney for an indigent defendant. So those types of sentences, rather than what you would call procedural sentences or changes to the law, you want to make sure that all these people who've gone to the system are actually being processed in a constitutional through and giving full due process.
Due process.
Yes.
Our guest today, Kristen Staley, a senior policy associate at the Michigan Council on Crime and Delinquency. As we mentioned earlier, our state has one of the highest numbers of juveniles sentenced to life without parole. It's in the hundreds, is it?
In fact, it's around 350 people. Yes.
So we come in second in the United States, second only to Pennsylvania. Why are the numbers so high in Michigan?
Well, I mean, really, it's about the culture here in Michigan. We tend to pride ourselves in being extremely tough on crime in Michigan. In the mid-90s, late 80s and mid-90s, we saw a very large sea change in terms of a creation of laws that made it a lot easier to prosecute young people as adults. One of them being we created the option to sentence a 14, a 15, or a 16-year-old or to the possibility of life without parole.
Adult time for adult crime,
correct.
I think, was the kind of the catchphrase
yes,
that went with that sea change.
Yes, it was. And you know, and Governor Engler, who was the governor at that time, promoted these changes as the idea that we will be the toughest on juvenile laws in the nation. Whether, during that, however, we now know, based on lots of evidence and scientific research, that youth really are not adults.
Mm-hmm.
The American Psychological Association, which has been cited by the United States Supreme Court in all of these landmark cases, has really made it very clear that like I said before, that young people's brains have not developed in the same way as adults. They are not making the same types of decisions. And that really just, they should not be processed in the same way.
Attorney General Schuette has praised the Michigan Supreme Court's decision not to apply this retroactively because he said that resentencing hearings would be traumatizing for families of victims. How do you balance what you see as a need for reform when it comes to juvenile justice with the very real pain that families of victims feel?
Oh, absolutely. And it's not to say that any of these cases aren't horrific crimes, that these are very serious offenses, that many of these people have committed things that, are very unspeakable. However, when there's actually been quite a bit of support from victims' families. TOCA via Louisiana, which is the case that the Supreme Court is going to be taking up this session, there's actually great support by that victim's family. There's been amicus briefs written saying that they don't want to see this young person die in prison with a sentence of, they want to have this person be given a possibility of parole.
So this is a discussion going on amongst the families of victims as well. We shouldn't necessarily assume that all families of all victims are against these rules.
Exactly.
Is what you're saying. Do
you
know how that breaks down, though?
I don't know how it breaks down, but we see many victims' families, the families of victims, stand up, even in the Michigan, during the more recent state Supreme Court cases in CARP and the other two cases that came up forward. There was a very robust amicus brief written by many victims' families who have of offenders who are now currently sitting as juvenile lifers in our state prison, that wanted to get rid of the option to sentence a young person to life without possibility of parole.
Kristen Staley has been our guest. Kristen is Senior Policy Associate at the Michigan Council on Crime and Delinquency. And a very interesting discussion, ongoing discussion. Kristen, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Mark.
While advocates for prison reform herald the Supreme Court's recent decisions about sentencing for juvenile offenders as progress, some victims' rights organizations say the legal back and forth has been torture for families who have lost loved ones to teenage murderers. Joining us now to talk about how those families are reacting to the court's decision to consider whether Miller v. Alabama will apply retroactively is Jody Robinson. Jody's a spokesperson for the National Organization for Victims of Juvenile Murderers. Welcome to Current State, Jody.
Thank you.
What kind of impact do you think a decision to let this ruling apply retroactively? What kind of impact do you think that would have on families of victims?
I think for the vast majority of the victims, it will be a very devastating impact. It will bring re-traumatization and pain and suffering to many families. And, on top of that, you're taking away our justice and due process. She talked a little bit about due process for the offenders. And, I ask the courts and I ask, how are we going to apply Miller retroactive? My case is nearly 25 years old, and, they're asking us to look at such things as her upbringing, her schooling, all of these factors when you can't go back 25 years and recreate that. Her mother has since deceased. My mother died 11 months after my brother. The judge has since passed away.
It was a woman that was found guilty of murdering your brother. This is obviously an important issue to you personally because of this. Tell us about what happened.
My brother was killed in 1990 on Mother's Day. He was out to buy my mother a Mother's Day card and never came home. A young girl and her boyfriend had plotted a plan, it was a three-day plan, to steal a car because she wanted to go see her father in New Mexico. So she, the night before, they stole a license plate. The day of, she went to the car, went to the Kmart where my brother was at purchasing a Mother's Day card. She purchased a 6-inch fillet knife, lured my brother to a vacant home, and they continued to stab him 27 times and nearly decapitate him for a car because she wanted to go see her father.
Jody Robinson is our guest. She is a Michigan resident and a spokesperson for the National Organization for Victims of Juvenile Murderers. Jody, what was your reaction when you heard that the U.S. Supreme Court would be considering this question of retroactivity?
Again, as Kristen had said, you know, this has been ongoing for 9 years now, and I've been actively involved. So although I was not surprised, I was a little disheartened that, again, no consideration was taken for the victims. They announced this a week before Christmas. Couldn't wait till after the holidays to tell us that we're yet in limbo and we're yet, you know, so for me personally, it's 3 days before Christmas. And instead of, you know, it's already heartbreaking enough not to have my brother here. As my family, all my brothers and sisters, we've not missed a Christmas since the day I was born. We're always together, and there's always one missing, my brother. So now, instead of thinking of him, I'm thinking of his murder.
What would you say to someone who makes the argument, as Kristen Staley just did, that these offenders were still very young when they committed these crimes and that they deserve a second chance, that their youth needs to be taken into consideration?
And I believe that in all cases, the youth is taken. That is why, you know, the advocates for offenders want to say, you know, this is cruel and unusual. Well, the reason why it's unusual is because we take great care in handing out the sentence. We just don't hand it out to anybody. And the Supreme Court did rule that this is very constitutional sentence of life without parole. Juveniles can receive this sentence, and this is for the worst of the worst. And that's why it is so rare. That is why it's unusual, is because we only hand it out to those who truly have done a heinous adult crime in an adult state of mind. Many of these are premeditated murders.
Kristen Staley made the point earlier that the victims' rights community is not necessarily of one mind on this, that the case going before SCOTUS, before the Supreme Court of the United States, involves the family of a victim who is actually of the opinion that reform is necessary. When you meet someone from the victims' rights community who has this opinion, what do you say to them?
You know, I have met some here in Michigan, and it's, you know, the two families that I have met, one of them, it's a very strange case because a son killed the sister. So a brother-sister. So, of course, you know, as much as my heart goes out to that mother, you know, she's lost her daughter, and now she wants her son back. She wants him out of prison. The other case, there is some circumstances where the offender has made great strides. They have contacted each other, and they believe it. And that's for them to have their own feelings on. And I truly am a true believer of our system. You know, in our case, she has been through every round of appeals all the way up to the federal for habeas corpus.
Well,
she even went in front of our governor for a commutation. All of them have said she is exactly where she needs to be. She's not rehabilitated. She's shown no remorse. Yet I keep getting pulled into court, and I keep having to relive this year after year after year. And I ask, isn't that cruel and unusual?
We have less than 1 minute to go. There's one more question I have to ask you. On the National Organization for Victims of Juvenile Murderers website, the organization says families of victims must be key stakeholders in discussions about prison reform. How would you like to see victims' families included? What do you think that would look like? What should that look like?
I think that as these are being discussed, as legislation's being discussed, as all of this, we, as victims, we are individuals. We don't have the money and the support that, that these offender advocates do. I recall reading they've spent over, in the billions of dollars trying to free these juveniles. We don't have that kind of money. So we would like to be included in the discussion. If you're going to talk about changing the sentence of the offender that killed my loved one, I should take part and see what that looks like. All this money has been sent to free them. None has been spent in prevention or outreach to the victims that are being re-traumatized for counseling, for help, for support, nothing. And that is where the problem lies. And I'd like to just say one more thing before you end. Kristen had talked about why Michigan is so high in ranking of juvenile offenders. And it's not because we got tough on crime. It's because we have three cities here in Michigan that rank the top 10 in crime nationwide. We have more crime in Michigan. That is why we have more youthful offenders.
We've been talking about the U.S. Supreme Court's decision to consider whether the 2012 case Miller v. Alabama, which found that mandatory sentencing of juvenile offenders to life without parole is unconstitutional, whether or not that will apply retroactively. We've been joined here by Jody Robinson, spokesperson for the National Organization for Victims of Juvenile Murderers. Jody, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.